You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello everybody and welcome to a fresh out of the box episode, a newbie of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. The Husk and the Lord have graced us with their presence once again, and I think it's fair to say James is a little overexcited this week. Why?
Why am I overexcited? That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Why?
You've come with you're like a kid that's had too many emails.
Oh, because Chloe's been in London all week, and
it's because Bert's such a good swimmer.
Yes,
and a good diver, and he's got really giddy about the fact that he could do that.
Yes, but also Chloe's been in London all week, and I've had no one to talk to, and it's always good to bond with Bert, but he doesn't give a lot back. He follows me everywhere, and we have a bit of a gang thing going on. But I had a sort of a mid afternoon lull. And now I'm back. It's exciting. We're talking Lions. We've got a special guest. We've got people in Premiership finals. We've got Premiership finals coming up. It's just, for every rugby purist and Keno, which we all know I am, this is such an amazing moment.
And have we done anything interesting? Tins, how did you get on Ascot? You look very smart. Little sidebar show. We enjoyed that.
Thanks. Yeah, did really well early on. And then I'm not going to say that the more champagne that got quaffed that my skills at picking the right horses went downhill, but it sort of did work out that way. But I did all right at the start. Let's put it that way. But finished off even at the end of it. Finished off even.
A claw back or just an escape out the side?
Yeah, I just managed to escape with my top hat.
Well, your missus, though, she won best in show, didn't she?
I know. She looked good, though.
No, she looked good.
She did.
She looked stunning.
But, and having me next to her always makes her look better, so...
Yeah,
that's very true.
Yeah, no, it's very good.
Inadvertently,
my role,
all
it's
of
my
us
role,
with your presence. It's a lovely touch that you bring to proceedings.
I mean, I thought Husk in the third race went really well. He just went a bit lame at the end.
I did. I got similar teeth to the horse. But enough about me. Let's talk about rugby.
Do less. Right.
I actually did. I shot in a competition. Actually, very 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 pleased that my shooting went very well. Which is good. I did that.
We're going to see about this on Thursday, though, aren't we? Though you're talking it up already. You've been in a few competitions. You better be good, or you're going to get rinsed.
I know. And do you know what? I actually thought about that. We're doing, just to let all the listeners at home know after the shambles of start, that we are doing the Good Bad Rugby Shooting Day. It is a corporate day where we will be hosting it and getting many excited people to shoot, obviously in a fun and safe manner. And I have obviously been talking this up for a while, and all sitting in the back of my mind has been the fact that if I turn up to this GBR day and can't hit anything, I shall never hear the end of it. I mean, if it's anything like the baseball when we were in Japan, where I single-handedly failed to do anything and showed to be a skillless wonder. And all the people I work with keep going, well, you've got great hand-eye coordination. I'm thinking, you've never seen me play rugby. Obviously. I'm like,
Are you bringing your own gun on Thursday?
Are you? Oh wow! Yes, all the gear.
Numpty.
And I know. And I've also got a little clay vest. They put my name on it and everything. But we tried to get it for free, and the woman went, well, you know, and we're not sure. You know, we've seen what his rant about farmers and angry. You know, we're not sure that he. Not sure that he needs to have a firearm. I was like, "Oh my god!" We asked for a free jacket, not your classification on my mental health. But thank you very much. So I've, you know, so
never mind. What I love about this is Tins and I have not uttered a word about our shooting day, but Tins has got his own shoot, and I was given a pair of Purdy's for my christening, and we're just very quietly going to turn up on the day. And I wasn't really, but you know, he's playing the stereotype. If you don't match up, stack up, and keep up, there's going to be hell to pay.
I mean,
just imagine.
When you say there's hell to pay, it's a bit.
Go on, Jazz.
When Alex says hell to pay, when Alex says always hell to pay, it's like being threatened by like a very old elderly relative with sort of a, you know, small wizened body. Oh, there'll be a hell to pay. What are you going to do? Not give me some Werther's originals?
No. I'm going to make you run with my pair of Purdy's.
I actually believed you had a pair of Purdy's then. I got very excited. No, no, no. I thought you've got, if you turn up with a you should turn up with a blunderbuss, you know, like loads of the whole
a couple of muskets.
Love that.
That's what I want. I need four different loaders. Utter gibberish. Away we go. Four becomes two in the race for this year's Premiership title. Exeter got over the line against a very good Sale Sharks side at Sandy Park. And they will play Quins at Twickenham after one of the most remarkable games I think the Premiership has ever held, isn't it?
I think they were the two of the best Premiership games I've seen for a long, long time. Both of them.
Which is brilliant. And needed a bit. And we've had a lot of good rugby recently, but there have been periods in the not-too-distant past where actually everyone's sort of been more interested in the half-time pint than the first half.
Yeah, I think and the way that the first half went at Bristol, you thought it was just going to be a one-way show. And I think Bristol for that first half probably played just about perfect rugby. The way that they didn't kick it out, they didn't allow Harlequins any possession in their half whatsoever. They just kept it on the field. Harlequins had run it back. They'd either get a turnover or a penalty, and they just... And then the second half was a complete role reversal. They had those starter plays just inside the half where they scored two off starter plays, and they just caused problems at breakdowns. And you just couldn't believe the sort of shift from Bristol looking unbeatable and just incredible to Quins doing the same in the second half.
Yeah. We'll come on to this game in more detail a little bit later on, because we've got our friend and our tormentor-in-chief, Joe Marler, who's going to sidle in for a chat a bit later on to talk to us about that, and much more as well. I mean, I know you two are busy, but he has got a hell of a lot going on in his life right now, including the fact he became a father for the fourth time last week.
I tipped my cap to him. I'm only on the third journey, and already it's a logistical nightmare, so I'd hate to think what four is.
Yes. Well done, Joe. We'll get into that a little bit later on. I did quickly want to reflect on last week's episode, because we also had... I know obviously it didn't pan out for them in the semi-finals, but when you look at how far Alex Sanderson and Sale have come over the course of the last few months, it's a hell of an upward curve. And I think he said at the end of the game, once we stop staring at the roots and start smelling the roses, we'll realise that. But we had some really nice feedback to our show with the Sale director of rugby last week. MJT said, wow, almost 2 hours felt like 10 minutes. Alex Sanderson is an absolute legend. What a lovely bloke, modest and humble. Richard Parry said, sorry to all your previous guests, but this has to be the best episode you've ever done. Alex is so articulate, smart and bloody funny. And Sanderson isn't bad either. Obviously he didn't say that last bit. But Caroline Nash said, Al Sanderson is fascinating. The reality is that teams perform so much better when a relationship between them and their coaches is founded on trust and respect. He makes it sound so very straightforward, but really it isn't. And Michael Dobson said simply, hashtag, what would Mark McCall do? Which I think is a question we've all been asking ourselves. But, I mean, it was a brilliant... I actually listened back to it, which I don't often do. But there's a hell of a lot to learn. And I can't help but feel that there's a lot to come from both Alex Sanderson and Sale in the next few weeks, months and seasons. Ask anything?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's a remarkable man, coach. We have many guests on here who bring a variety of stuff, but it's kind of his knowledge, his intensity, but also keeping it quite lighthearted was pretty special. As somebody commented to me, they managed to keep me relatively quiet for, you know, the hour and a half, which is always dangerous. And I knew it was a great guest because a lot of my friends pretend that they don't watch anything I do or see anything. But a lot of them give it away because they know like intimate details. And you're like, oh, I thought you didn't watch it. They're like, no, I didn't watch it, but I remembered everything. And I had about five or six of them just unashamedly go, who know Alex? Or like, loved the podcast with Alex. And I think he has made people fall in love with Sale again, has made them exciting. I think he's got, a good crop of players in there. And I think they'll be back. I was shooting on the weekend and I didn't see that game, but I was sort of following with bated breath to see where they did it. But Exeter, you know, six consecutive Premiership finals. I mean, you know, that is a pretty mental record if you're asking me.
There's quite a lot of the old Saracens in Exeter. And actually, I was just going to quickly mention the fact we talk about Mark McCall. They are back, Saris, in the Prem for next season. I think it was 117-15 over the two legs, which I think tells you everything you need to know about the gap at the moment. I don't know if you saw it, Tins, but Saris put out let's call it a little teaser on social media, just saying, we're back, have you missed us? So, I mean, they're definitely not coming back with their tail between their legs. They've served their time, and now it's time to get back into it. But when you look at the Premiership now, actually, just a sort of generic question, there's a hell of a lot of quality and competition now. It sort of feels like there are more big guns and more proper challengers to the title than we've had for quite some time.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you just look at the shift in points in terms of where you can jump from the bottom. You know, people scalp the big teams, but also then you've now got, I think, six genuine. You know, if Leicester continue their rise in terms of how they're playing as well, you have got a great group of where it's just going to be carnage, and you're going to have battles. Relegation comes back as well. You're going to have proper battles at the top and the bottom, because on each day, you look at someone like London Irish can play their role in ruining someone else's season. There is that ability throughout, and I love that. That's what we want. You want that unpredictability. You don't. It will make us better in Europe going forward if we have all those teams that can challenge, and then hopefully that will filter up to making England stronger as well.
How good was Jack Noll? How tough on Stuart Hogg?
It was obviously tough on Hoggy, but Hoggy's got a big summer coming up, and I think they want Jack game time. If they want to play him in the final, they had to play him in the semi. So, and he played unbelievably well, scored two. It did what Jack Noll does. He is a big game player. He's a guy who wants his hand on the ball and goes looking for it and works hard for it. And then when he's got it, he's hard to stop. That's before you add in what he can do defensively. I thought in the air he was fantastic as well. He barely put anything down. He was so solid. And then, you know, he gets over ball. He does everything. So it's quite nice when you can give Hoggy a little, you have this one off, mate. We'll just throw this fella in. And, you know, so that going forward for next week, obviously Quins have got a massive recovery job on their hands, because that will have emotionally and physically taken so much out of them and their players. You know, you only have to see how many players Bristol only finished with 13 men, because, you know, poor Harry Thacker can barely even walk. And I think it looked like he probably did his hammy at the end, unfortunately, after coming back from injury and then having to play in the as hooker and then move to back row. It was hard to watch from Bristol, because you do, even though it was fantastic for Quins, it was you sort of felt for Bristol a little bit.
I've got to hold my hands up here, Hask. I know obviously you were out and about shooting. I actually cashed in my chips last weekend. I went to England Scotland at Wembley, which is great fun, but definitely made me enjoy, I think, what we watch more regularly on a Saturday. And therefore I had to take the kids to a golf lesson on Saturday afternoon, and I missed Bristol Quins. And it's one of those extraordinary things where you occasionally check Twitter and you just see the whole thing erupting. And this sense of FOMO as I was watching my kids shank balls off the practice mat, as just everyone saying, this is the greatest game I've ever seen. This is the greatest game I've ever seen. I'm like, yeah, super. Lovely, lovely stuff. Really good. Keep going, kids. Keep going. But it made me think...
Were you like Chubbs Peterson in Happy Gilmore? Yeah, that's great. Yeah. All in the hips. Just, oh, beautiful shot.
There's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of
get me out of here.
Why won't you go home type thing. But... it did make me think. The reason I mentioned this, obviously, is that I'm really excited to be going back to do the Lions for Sky. And one of the things that they are promoting and pushing over the next few weeks is the fact that it's only live once. And my God, I've had a rude reminder of that. And it's just not the same when you come back and you watch the 3-minute clips 10 minutes, you know, after full time or whatever it is. So I wanted to ask you the question, what is the biggest sporting event you have not watched live, and therefore the greatest sense of FOMO that you've had off the back of it? I've got an absolute clanger. So I missed Joshua Klitschko. I recorded it. Brothers-in-law and father. I think it was my mum's birthday or something like that. We recorded it and sat down to watch it. And instead of going back to the beginning, we just pressed go live as Joshua lifted the belt. And Adam Smith said, that's one of the greatest bouts you've ever seen. And six of us went, that's not quite what we intended. So the sense of FOMO that either of you have had in any sport from not watching it live, and is that, am I on my own at that, or do you get that, that if it there is something about sport when it's not live, it's not sport?
Yeah, because you want to have that. Because you want to have that emotional attachment. Like I've said it before from my psychological point of view, and I had it exactly on the same weekend, because I walked off the shoot, turned on my phone. And, you know, I mean, David Flatman is not scared of a bit of hyperbole. Every week, someone's the greatest, the best. But when he said this is the best Premiership game, and I saw about 30 other people say it, and I was like, damn. And I started to get that sensation of, you know, where I'd love to have been involved. Do you know what I mean? It's a weird thing. It's like when I've watched Wimbledon and, you know, someone like Roger Federer, you know, has been engaged in some epic battle that's gone, you know, with Djokovic or Nadal or whatever. And you sort of just picked up and seen the end of it and seen it's been a five-set thriller. And I part, you know, and you see, you know, say Roger Federer get the record for the most, the most, Grand Slams. You kind of, those moments, you kind of, because you've been a sportsman, you want, even though I don't play tennis, you kind of want to be involved. You kind of want to feel that emotion because you know how good those big days are. And I think if you've ever tasted those finals and won stuff, it, when you miss out on things, you sort of want to be involved a little bit. And I often, with certain sporting events, just go, oh, I'm not going to watch it. Like some Super Bowls, you know, people stayed up for, and you wake up and find out it was the greatest Super Bowl game ever, went down to the wire, and you're like, oh, crap. You know, I had a great night's sleep, and I feel really refreshed, but I missed out on the greatest sporting event ever. And that's kind of what happens to me a lot of the time. I go for the sensible option where I'm not going to wake up in the morning. Like I missed Mayweather-Pacquiao. You know, I saw Hatton Mayweather, and I saw Hatton Pacquiao live in Las Vegas. But I missed him fight Pacquiao because I just went to bed, and then obviously it turned out to be a bit of a damp squib. But the fact was, it was one of the greatest, you know, supposed to be two of the greatest fighters ever, yeah, pitting themselves against each other.
Got to be there. Got to be in the moment. Tens, have you got one? I mean, you watch more sport than most, and I don't know how you do that with three children and a golf simulator.
Well, one that jumps to mind is where I missed my flight to go watch my wife compete in the World Championships, which she ended up winning.
That was a different variety. That doesn't necessarily need a paid TV subscription, but it's a good one.
Yeah, but it doesn't go down well with your wife when you have to ring her.
How the hell did you do that?
I always get to airports slightly. I always like to cut it quite fine, and this time it was a little bit too fine. But then also, when I was in Miami on my stag do, someone offered me tickets to, I can't remember whether it was a deciding game in the 2011 NBA Finals. It was Miami Heat versus the Dallas Mavericks. And I had to make a decision whether I went home or whether I went to this game and stayed another night. And I was going to stay another night. And then I had a moment of clarity where I needed to get home, and I didn't get up. And it was a fantastic series where Dallas Mavericks ended up beating them. But in terms of ones where I thought I've recorded it and then not, I can't think of one offhand. I've been lucky to go to a few good boxing matches. I went to Lennox Lewis versus Tyson in Memphis, which was unbelievable. I sat next to I went with a guy called Nathan Thomas from Bath, and we basically went on we went for 2 weeks, and we drove around the south of America. We flew into Atlanta, then sort of went to Nashville, went to Memphis, went to New Orleans, went to, where else did we go? St. Louis. And had a real drive around, and then had like 5 days for the fight. Was dancing in a bar with, literally, Evander Holyfield walks into this bar, and everyone's on the dance floor having a good time. Music in Memphis is amazing, all live in every bar. Obviously, the champ walks in, literally with 10 bodyguards. They just carve off the floor, literally cut it in half, and the only people who can get through the line are females. So it suddenly turns into a sausage fest dancing on the other side, and he's just one man dancing with all these ladies. And it was just like, you're obviously going, do you think you could take Tyson now? And he's obviously just laughing it off and everything else. But that was incredible. I was ended up sat next to, I don't know where we got our tickets from. We met this guy behind a hotel and bought our tickets. And I was sat next to Gary Payton of the Seattle Supersonics, literally next to me. And I was like, how have we got these tickets? Just back from ringside. And we could just hear Lewis destroyed him, so... I didn't miss that one. That was a great one to be at.
Did Holyfield's bodyguards, did they run the blitz or the drift? It sounds like the greatest defensive line of all time.
They were straight up. They were straight up blitzing. No one coming through. See you later. Anyone came anywhere near, you were smashed backwards.
Oh, impressive.
They definitely won the physical battle on that one.
The point of this, I think, is that it's only live once. And therefore get into it. And actually, obviously, the thing you want to be careful of is you don't want to overhype the Lions. That kind of takes care of itself. But it is big. Everyone knows it's big. It's actually worth mentioning as well that if you're into your Lions rugby, there are some really good docs available on Sky at the moment. Actually, there's that fabulous Chasing the Sun, which is a painful watch for Englishmen. Welsh, Scottish, and Irish might enjoy it a little bit more. It's the story of South Africa winning the Rugby World Cup in 2019. There's obviously Living with Lions, which everyone knows and loves. Well, actually, given who we've got coming up in a moment or two, Joe Marler's Big Boys Don't Cry is also available on the Sky platform. Very different, very, very good indeed. Tuck into that if you haven't seen it. And with that in mind, the T's and C's and the bits of detail, Sky is the only place to watch every tour match live, Sky Sports that is, with just one chance to see the Lions every 4 years, one chance every 12 to watch them against the mighty Box. You can't really afford to miss it. It starts on the 3rd of July. I'm sure most of you know that by now. It's £18 extra per month for non-Sky Sports subscribers. And you can catch every game live. It's available sky.com/sports if you want to do some upgrading. It is only live once. Don't miss it. Come and play. It's going to be epic. And on that note, talking of Joe Marler, seatbelts on, gum shields in, please, everybody, as we welcome in sweet Josephine. How are you?
You're starting off like that, are you?
I've had 2.5 years of counselling to get me through the last time we did this, and I can already feel a booking coming on for later this week with my therapist. How are you, Joe Marler?
Yeah, can you not say my whole name? Can you just? I thought we've got past that.
How are you, Joe?
I'm all right, Alex Payne. Like, how weird's that? If we talk like that, shall we? Hello, Alex Payne. How are you, Alex Payne?
All right, thanks, Joe.
How are you doing, Mike Tindall? How are you? Great to see you.
It's James Haskell. It's great to see you, Joe. It's great to see you, Joe.
Yeah, see, he's got it right. It's like he's been doing it for longer than you, Alex, which he hasn't. So. Right, I'm ready. I'm good.
Right, good. Let's get into it. I'm going to read you a paragraph from The Telegraph this week. In one of the greatest games the Premiership has ever been... take two. In one of the greatest... I'm nervous. I'm genuinely sweating.
Are you okay?
No, not hugely. I'm having trauma. I've got like Stockholm syndrome. I've got all sorts of problems going on in my head right now. From The Telegraph this week, in one of the greatest games the Premiership has ever seen, the wily loosehead Joe Marler was at the forefront once again. He spent 94 of the eventual 100 minutes on the field, a Premiership record for a prop, after arriving at the match in a helicopter due to the birth of his fourth child. I would say that as far as sentences go, that's got quite a lot going on in it right now. Is your life every bit as chaotic as that would seem, or are you under control?
I haven't really stopped. I haven't had time to fart, let alone think. So it has all been a bit of a whirlwind. This is the first time I've actually sat down and gone, oh, fucking hell. And what a pleasant company to do it with.
First and foremost, how's the new edition?
How is the new edition, indeed?
Yeah,
what did you get?
She's good. What did you mean?
What make did you get?
What did you get dealt?
Well, it was a girl. Yeah, girl. It was a human girl, yeah. Right. And her name's Pixie Tallulah Rainbow. Really went to town on this one. Someone said, well, she's not going to be a bloody accountant with that name, is she? I went, I don't know. If she wants to be an accountant, she can be an accountant.
Pixie Tallulah Rainbow Marler.
Pixie Tallulah Rainbow Marler, yeah. Although we're not sure about the Marler bit yet, so we're working on that.
Oh, that's the bit you're unsure about. That was the bit. Not the rainbow or the Tallulah. That's the bit you're not sure about. The only bit that's actually a certainty of the whole name is that you're not sure of it.
Well, it's not a certainty. We've been trying to change our last name for a while now, but it turns out it's actually a lot more complicated than I thought, because you have to change, like, everything. Bank statements, and it's just passports. It's just, you know, rubbish.
What?
It's like when... Who was it?
What
Jimmy White.
For?
What are you thinking about going for here?
I don't know.
Fire Dragon?
I guess, Fire Dragon?
The Enforcer?
No. You know, like, nothing stupid
Smith.
Like that. I'm talking like a company sponsoring us, our surname, paying. So whoever pays the most, you know, look, we're happy to be...
I thought it was Driveway and Patios, wasn't it?
Be very careful, James. Be very, very careful.
James. That's coming out.
If you want to tread this
no,
very
not.
Thin line, this line that is as thin... thin as yours and I's hairline, then we can, but we have to be very, very careful.
Do you have a deck for your surname?
All of you have jumped...
Go on, Hask.
I was going to say that you jumped the gun slightly, Alex and Joe, by insinuating that I might have gone close to a line. Do I not remember that your limited company was something called Driveways and Patios? And so that's where the corporate name. Didn't it was Joe Marler Driveways and Patios is what you went with your limited company?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I will accept you. This is what all of you have done in 2021. You're so all ready to be frightened and paranoid that you thought I was going there. I didn't. I saw the line, but I'm 200 miles away sitting in an ivory tower. Relax about the line. I just wondered if that's...
No. Okay. No, James. I wasn't worried. I wasn't scared or frightened about treading any line. I was worried for you.
Don't be worried about me.
Like, my reputation's been fucked for years, so there's no issues there. You, however, you've gradually built your way back up to people enjoying you, liking you, close to loving you, and I don't want you to spoil that by saying something outrageous again.
I appreciate it.
Can I ask at this point, have you got a deck for your surname? And could we potentially receive that? Because the opportunity to rebrand you as Joe and Daisy Good, Bad and Rugby is a golden opportunity we'd love to investigate.
That's a little bit long-winded, isn't it? Just like, oh, meet our new daughter. Her name's Pixie Tallulah Rainbow, the Good, the Bad, the Rugby.
No, just do...
I think it's got a lovely ring to it.
Just do Pixie, Tallulah, Rainbow, GBR. Just do that. Pixie, Tallulah, Rainbow, GBR.
GBR? Great British
Good
Rowing.
Good Bad Rugby, actually. We were around before Great British Rowing, so relax.
Thank you. 1-0. Thank you.
How are Mum and Baby?
Yeah, Mum. Daisy, she's doing really well, and Baby is doing really well. She's doing everything that she should be doing. And, yeah, I was about to go a bit further than that, but we won't, because, dignity of my wife and stuff, need it to be kept intact.
Have the other three welcomed Pixie, Tallulah, Rainbow with open arms? I mean, it was lovely. I met your family. They kind of invited themselves into our studio at Sky. I think Hask, you were there as well for that, which was a lot of fun. Have they welcomed their new sister with open arms?
Yeah, Jasper and Maggie are somewhat obsessed with her. They're almost claustrophobicising her every 5 minutes. Whereas Felix, who's the youngest... kind of, she arrived and he looked her up and down. He doesn't speak too much, but I knew what his eyes were saying, and his eyes were like, who the fuck are you? You're coming in here and now you're the baby. This is bullshit. I've got your card. Do you know what I mean?
It's still my time. It's still my time.
Yeah. my boobies, my boobies. No, they're not your fucking boobies. Now piss off. But he's slowly warm to her. He's getting there. He's slowly catchy monkey.
Good. How in God's name did you end up in a helicopter on Saturday? Whose idea and how rock star? Did you wear the aviators? Did you go full Airwolf, or was it quite a sort of corporate, more Air Force One type thing?
I had said to work that my wife was pregnant, and they were like, cool. And I said, I've read there's about 2 weeks. I think you're allowed to legally take 2 weeks paternity. And they were like, yeah. And I said, the baby's due 14th of June. And they were like, yeah. And I said, I've never taken paternity. Tinge, you've probably recognised this. You don't get paternity in rugby, do you? You get the day off the following day, and then they're like, are you good to crack on? You'll be all right, won't you? You're saying, running around the field, yeah, fucking hell. Don't give a shit about my marriage. Then no worries, just get on the fucking pitch. So I've never done it before, and I said, look, I'm taking the paternity. And they went, okay, but if we make the semi-final and or the final or however, that's the two-week paternity. And I said, yeah.
Who spoke first?
Like that. And Billy Millard went, and I went, what's funny? And he said, oh, you're being serious, mate. I was like,
Yeah, I am. You are. Okay, mate, let's have a discussion about this another time. So we did, and then we ended up getting to the semi-final. And I was like, Bill, the baby's still not here, and I don't think I'm going to be able to play in Bristol if the baby's not come by Friday. And they were like, okay, but it's a semi-final. And I was like, yes, I know. You've said that quite a lot to me. And I have also replied to you with, but it's my marriage. And, you know, zzz, zzz. So then they went with, okay, we'll leave you to it for a bit. And hopefully the baby comes before Friday and then you can play Saturday then. I was like, yeah, sweet. And there was no sign of the baby coming whatsoever. And all the usual techniques that are advised to partake in. To hurry things along, not really keen on that when it gets to the later stages. It just wasn't there for me. It wasn't going to work that way. She's a vegetarian. There's not many veggie curries I can cook. She doesn't like hot stuff, so that didn't work either. So I thought, well, that's it. We had a good run. Sorry, I can't make the semi-final, lads. All the best. And then they came out last minute and were like, look, what if we get you a chopper? And I went, fuck off. They said, what do you mean fuck off? I said, fuck off. I said, I'm not getting on a helicopter. And they said, why not? And I said, it's because you're scared of heights, isn't it? I said, no, it's not because I'm scared of heights. I said, what's the problem then? It'll get you there back in an hour, like you'll be fine, like fly in, fly out, bosh. I said, that's not the issue. I said, what's the issue? I said, you've done this on purpose. You've not done this to get me to the game. You've done this because you know full well I've got a catalogue of ammo against everyone at this club. There's folders and folders and folders and folders of stuff that I've got. And by you making me take a helicopter like the world's biggest diva to a semi-final in Bristol and back again has now rendered all of those files I have against everyone null and void. So... well played to them, I say. Well played, Harlequins. Because now, whenever I give anyone any shit, they'll just go, didn't you get a helicopter to a game once? And I'll go, yep, I'm off home now. So that's how it happened, and that's what it was. But I will finally say, it's not like it was like massive luxury chopper. It was the smallest tin can you could squeeze in. And the bloke, the pilot was like... do you want to sit in the front? And I went, not a fucking chance. He went, are you sure? Because the bottom's glass. I went, oh, yeah, that really made me get in the front. Yeah, pretty weird.
Did you find yourself... did you wear aviators? Please tell me you wore aviators and a white safari suit just to kind of complete the image for the journey. Did you find yourself thinking, I could do this every week? I mean, good. Daisy, if you're up for it, I could fly in and out of every game like this every week, particularly Newcastle. Good.
No, just don't do Newcastle. No aviators, Alex. It was mentioned to the owner on the pitch after, though, when he came up to me and I thanked him. I said, thank you so much for helping me out, Mr. Owner. Thank you so much, Mr. Owner, Mr. Millionaire, Mr. Gazillionaire, all this. But you know what this means, don't you? And he went, what? I said, well, Heathfield is still like 2 hours away from Twickenham, so... I'm going to need the chopper next week. And he laughed. And I'm like, is that a no then? And that just made me realise that's why, you know, the rich stay rich, because they're really tight. Like, has Tins ever bought you a drink, Alex or James?
Yeah, he has actually. In Japan, he led from the front. Yeah. In fact, both of them did.
Who? Did James buy a pint?
Yeah.
He put his hand in his own pocket. It wasn't someone else's pocket, no?
Well, I don't know who was claiming it back off, but he was quick to pay.
He wasn't that quick when Framboise fuddled Dolly Wally Wally, and we went into that restaurant that they ordered the sake in, and suddenly the bill was like that 2.5 grand for four of us.
That was not a good night. mad scenes. I think that's one of the great stories.
Mad scenes. No. Alex, you can't say stuff like
that.
What,
you flying to a premiership semi-final in a helicopter 24 hours after your wife's given birth to your fourth child? I'd file that under mad scenes.
Yeah, no, I've not got any issue with what you've described. I've got the issue with you going, mad scenes.
great story.
mad scenes.
Joe,
like
Joe, this is what we have to put. This we have to put up with. It's basically the rebirth of Alex Payne. Every week he's got progressively more street, and it's like an elderly relative just coming down.
Rebirth.
And like,
it's the consistent destruction.
Yeah,
of Alex
Payne. Genji's been rubbing off of you, and now he's not here. You've just gone. Yeah, I'm going to step up. Mad scenes.
I think right, he said okay. something like Wagwan.
Joe,
like,
what a
Wagwan
story
the other day. Wagwan was awful, and he said, and then he started.
I had so much abuse for that. I didn't say that. I just said, "Go on, England," with an apostrophe.
Wagwan.
I'm trying to talk. I want to talk about one of the greatest Premiership games of all time, and the direction of traffic.
That's subjective. It's very subjective.
Okay. Tell me about the game itself. Do you stop and reflect on things like that, or are you just back in the chopper and going home, or do you genuinely know when you have been in one of the most extraordinary games any of us have ever seen?
There's a couple of moments that stand out for me that I actually remember vividly. One was we were, I think it was 21 nil down under the sticks, and Scott Baldwin, we've all come into a huddle, and Scott Baldwin is started to lose his nut, like, even to the point where you know someone's really losing it when they've got both hands and they're like, they're chopping like really hard into it. And he's gone with the, I'm sure you've all experienced this when there's 10 minutes to go and we're 50 points down and someone steps up and you go, boys, we've got two choices. We can just completely give up. Or we can fight for some pride right now, thingy. And that was the speech that Scott gave. Like, he's losing it. He's really fucking losing it. It's 21-0 down. And I've turned and looked at the clock and I'm like, fucking hell, there's 65 minutes to go. There's 65 minutes to go and we've already got the panic chat. Like, we're playing for pride now, boys. And I was like, oh, God, okay. No, right, okay, let's go out. Let's just try hardest. Let's go, boys. Let's go for it. They score again. We're 28-0 down. 28-0. We're 28-0 down under the sticks, and it's a little bit more silent. And we look, everyone's looking round. The eyes are glancing. Right, who's going to take this one then? Who's going to take? And I'm stood there, like, in my head. This is my exact thoughts. I'm going, fuck. They're going to put 50 on us here. We're going to have 50 points put on us in a semi-final. Oh, well, it was a good run whilst it lasted. We had fun. And then it quickly dawned on me. I went, shit, hang on. There's boys that might be looking at me. Right, sort my body language out so they don't recognise that I've just said in my head they're going to put 50 on us. So I was like, yep, let's go. And then, to be fair, Matt Simmons, he managed to, like, grasp some sort of direction out of it all, and he said, look, boys, we got a long way to go. Let's just work in 5-minute blocks. Let's see where we go, see where it gets us. 5 minutes at a time, 5 minutes at a time. And I think that try just before half time kind of gave us a little bit of, oh, okay. It also helped our cause. I don't think it helped Bristol's cause that, as we saw a lot of them walking in at half time, and also a lot of their management looked really quite smug. There was a lot of tight smiles going around, which you can't blame them for. If you've scored four tries and you're 28 points up at half time in a semi final, you're going to struggle not to lick your lips and go, happy days, boys. So that kind of spurred us on a little bit. And then we had a chat at half time, and then the next moment that really stood out for me was, I think, halfway through the second half. We were running back, we just scored, I think it was the Chisholm try that came out of like a quick turnover, and he pounced on it and then scored. And I was like, what the fuck, where's that come from? And we were running back to the halfway, and I turned to Steph Lavis, our skipper, and he's looking at me, and we've looked at each other quite a lot in games sometimes, especially the mad ones we've been involved in. And we had the same look of, I have no idea what's going on. Neither of us can contribute in any way whatsoever to the madness that is running round us at the moment. I can't catch my fucking breath, and I'm just in complete limbo with, I don't know what's going on. What's going on? And I said that to him, and he said, I don't know. I don't know what's going on, my China. I don't know. I don't know either. What's going on? And that was it. It's still pretty mental to think about. Yeah, that's it.
What did you say to, what was your chat with Stuart Barnes? Oh, sorry, hang on. I was going to say, what was your chat with Stuart Barnes at half-time? Because there was a lot of focus on that, and there seems to be a few laughs and giggles.
Stuart Barnes or Wayne Barnes?
Was
Wayne Stuart
Barnes,
there, was
sorry,
he?
Sorry, Wayne Barnes.
Keep going, Joe, because this is one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. I mean, the legends who've gone before, Delalio, who tells stories of heroism, and Willie John, who tells stories of the 99 call. We've got Marla in the middle of the greatest game the Premiership's ever staged, having dropped by helicopter with absolutely no idea what's going on, trying to work out how Quins are making their way back from 28-0 down and worried about shipping 50. This is extraordinary. Keep going. I'm loving every minute on it.
What was Tin said something about Barnsley, did he?
Wayne Barnes.
Oh,
what
yeah, Wayne Barnes. I went up to him. I said, Barnsley, is it? Barnsley. And he's not been talking to me recently. In the games that he's refereed me, he's refused. He said, I'm not speaking to you. If you want to speak to me, you can go through my ARs. And I said, that's fine. That's fine. I'll go through your ARs. It's fine. Paul Dix, can you tell Wayne Barnes I'm not talking to him either? And it, you know, it'll go like that. In the first half, several times, we were on the wrong side of the penalty count. I think it was 7-1 on the penalty count. And there was a lot of chat coming from Bristol. They were, oh, Barnsley, what can you look at? Oh, Barnsley, look at his binding. Barnsley, he's got to roll away. And I kept going to, Barnsley, is it? It's Barnsley. You know, not sir. All of us are calling you sir. Them lot are calling you Barnsley. And he was just like, And then I said to him, I said, oh, also, where's this, like, West Country accent? Like, I know you're from, I thought you're from, like, Somerset or Cornwall. I didn't realise you were actually from Bristol. You know, all this bab chat's coming out as if to say, like, any chance of giving us a pen? Or you're just sticking with your mates from the West Country? Because we were that much down at that point, it was treading a fine line of descent towards a referee. And I thought, well, fuck it. If you're going to go down, you've got to go down in a bit of style. Do you know what I mean? So luckily he didn't take that as a form of descent. He smiled and waddled off. He's good value. He was very good, and I will give him this. And I'm not one to be overly rugby nausey, even though I am a massive rugby nause. I will say this: he did play a very good part in what was an incredibly open game. So fair play to him.
When Joe's talking about having to look after his body language, you know, I imagine all the teammates are going, oh, Christ, is that the retirement body language? Is that he's going to get sin-binned? Is that he's going to get told, oh, shit. He can't like, fart without sending panic through the ranks. And I can imagine. Because the thing is, I bet that was a bit through your head when you were 28-0 down and you started getting into Barnsley going, I might just get sent off now. I'll probably get in the chopper and be back home with Daisy before the game's finished. Was there any of that going on?
No, those days are long behind me, James.
Right.
Although, as I was kind of like drifting away a little bit to run to my spot for the kickoff, there were a couple of eyes thinking that I was getting a little bit too close to the changing rooms, and that I wasn't going to say anything, and I was just walking off. And then they turn around and go, where's he gone again? There was a little bit of that, but no.
You did do a nice bit where you got tackled, and instead of just placing the ball back, you placed it into Ben Earl's face before and then rolled it across his face before you placed it back.
It's about,
typical,
you know,
Marla.
No, it's not typical Marla. That's typical speed of ball. What I'm trying to do is create quicker ball. And he was slowing it down. Everyone wants an attacking game. All the fans want an attacking game. And to provide an attacking game, you need quick ball. I was trying to provide quick ball by pushing it as quickly as I could. And his face,
into his face
was in the way of me presenting. And that is not my fault. He needs to move his face and put it in a different place.
Oh, man. Marcus Smith, I want to ask you about. We've spoken to him a couple of times, actually. A kid with the world at his feet. I'd love to know how much you're responsible for where he is right now and where he fits into your life.
Where he fits into my life?
Yeah.
Well, he's a fly-half that I play rugby with. He doesn't fucking fit into my life. What are you on about? You making out like I like people in rugby. That's not fair. You know that, Ed.
Well, it's a generic question. You can take it wherever you like. I mean, do you speak to him in any other capacity than, you know, this is what I want from you this weekend? Does he ask you for advice?
He's under 25. I don't speak to anyone under 25.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear.
No, that's not true. I'm trying to do the whole James, you know, old school bravado. Don't talk to the academy. Don't make eye contact with me. Go and clean my boots and make me a cup of tea whilst my nutsack is out. That's the sort of thing. No, Marcus, believe it or not, is the only teammate, Harlequin's teammate, in fact, any teammate, the only teammate I've ever had at my house.
Wow.
So that's, you know, that's a statement, really. Sorry, James. Sorry, mate. It is an open invite. You just never took me up on it.
I'm just asking, can I just clarify something? When you say at your house, do you mean that's where you
park? Oh, here we go. Let me guess. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, brilliant. Knew that. Because that you need to. Do you know what? Get your fucking record player. Yeah, get it in your hand. What you do is you open it up and then you go like that. You go, shh, shh, and then you get another one and then you put it in and you go, psht, and then you close it and then you press play. Fine. And what you've done there is you've changed the record. Fine. So fucking do that, would you?
I just want to clarify just two things. Are you in a caravan at the moment? Are you in a caravan at the moment? Just answer the questions for the judge and for the panel. Are you in a caravan as we speak with a battery light illuminating you in your fortress of solitude, a.k.a. caravan? And also, let's just be very clear. Don't take it down.
Looks like a lightsaber.
It does look like a lightsaber. It looks like something. There he goes. Look, look. Here we go.
Darth Marla.
Right.
James, I can confirm I'm in a caravan and I am with a
by the realms of possibility, for someone, because you live in miles away, right, as we talk, miles and miles away, ideally so you don't ever have to have anyone at your house, but I wondered if you move the caravan closer, hence Marcus Smith would have access to it on the right day. You may have been plugged into some sort of you know, lamppost or something, charging up some accessories, and he might have just popped by for a cup of tea or a boil in the bag of curry. No.
So I thought we'd move past it. You know that time that I came onto your podcast, Thank What you. A Flanker podcast, which is a wonderful podcast, may I add. Do you remember that time I came up? I made that travel all the way up to see you in person at that lovely studio, and it filmed us, and we had a lovely, lovely chat. Got a little bit deep, a little bit light, a little bit dark, you know, a little bit loose. And it wasn't just this massive cock-off. It was actually really nice to talk to a friend. That's what it felt like. And what you've done now is ruin that friendship because you're showing off in front of your mates. Your regular mates.
Sorry.
You're showing off in front of them. And you didn't do that when we were on our own. And because you've done that... For the rest of the show, there'll be occasional shameless plugs.
The Joe Marla Show, which is an equally good podcast.
The Joe Marla Show. I want to come on to the Joe Marla Show.
No,
can we come on to that
let's just talk about Marcus in a serious thing, because he needs the credit where it's due. He's an unbelievable rugby player. He can do stuff a lot of people can't. Very instinctive, but what I've really, really enjoyed about him is the maturity he's shown and the sort of, he hasn't got an old head on young shoulders, like they say, because he's still a kid and he still has a laugh and he's still himself, and he always makes sure that one of the biggest message he gets across to all the boys is, look, let's play with smiles on faces. That's his thing. He just loves playing rugby. Absolutely loves it. And he's been unbelievable for us. Absolutely unbelievable. And I just think I think he's a really good kid. And I hope he gets the opportunity to go and prove himself on the international stage at some point. At some point. You also got to realise you don't want him to be a one-cap wonder or a few caps. You look at someone like Matthew Tate, for example, who's thrown in at the deep end and he had a great career. He had a great, you know, especially a great club career, but he never really recovered from that. Whereas he could have potentially, if he was managed really well, he could have gone on and been 50, 60, 70 caps. And that's kind of what I want to see Marcus do. I want him to see, you know, a long international career. So hopefully he'll get that chance.
I got a question for you. With him and how he plays and how instinctive he plays and how he's allowed that freedom at Harlequins, do you think he would fit into Eddie's team? Would Eddie need to adjust his coaching to suit Marcus, or can Marcus make that shift to change to how Eddie wants to play? Because I think everyone, myself personally, think he plays at the line, plays what he sees, but with the freedom that you play with, it enhances his skill set. Now, if he went to a more structured game, which possibly England do play at the moment, would he be able to do that, or would England be better changing to suit their fly half?
Fucking hell. Jesus Christ! I know I said I was a rugby nause, but Christ, you've taken it another level. What do I think to that? I don't know. My initial reaction is, well, Test rugby, I compare it to cricket. Test cricket and 2020 are a different animal, aren't they? And at the moment, I think the Premiership, I wouldn't say it's as like thingy like 2020, but it's no relegation, it's pretty loose as fuck, and you're not really going to get that on the test stage. But Marcus has got the skills to do, I think, the skills to do both. Whether he wants to do both is a different question, because there's one thing being coachable and wanting to please or play the game. We all play the game to a certain extent in order to fit in as much as you want. But at the same time, you also want to stay true to yourself, don't you? And I think the way he enjoys playing rugby is where we're at the minute. He loves that attacking side of things. And I don't think you've got that freedom at Test rugby right now. Maybe Test rugby will move into that realm, but I don't know. I've answered that really poorly, mainly because I don't really give a shit. You know, I don't want to bag Eddie because I don't really know how to bag Eddie. I don't know what you're talking about being a structure, because I've no mindset or place on that. Just fucking bend over and push and plod around a pitch. You know, it's as old and cliched as that, mainly because that's all I can do.
You did that for 94 minutes of the 100 at the weekend. Do you feel all right on Sunday?
No.
You're quite good at body management nowadays. How do you get... I mean, that's a hell of an innings in a game like that, is what I'm trying to say. Do you feel it?
I mean, people have been saying, oh, what an innings, you played 94 minutes. I went, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. What was the ball in play? The ball in play was probably no more than 30 minutes. And if you actually look at what I did in the first half, I didn't do anything. So it's no wonder I had enough in my legs to go for the second half. So as much as it would be nice and easy to be like, yeah, thanks for all the praise, I played 94 minutes, yeah, fucking hard, yeah, I could do it. I didn't do anything in the first half. Hence, and you know, a lot of us didn't. They were fucking unbelievable. Radradra, Piatau, all of them. We were like, Jesus Christ, they are so good. They are so, so good. And, you know, hardly any of us did anything. So no wonder we had loads in the tank for the second half. No, I don't really look at it like that, Alex. Sorry.
The question that people are asking is there a danger you've played your final?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Which is, can you find the answers to the problems you had in the first half, and can you repeat the energy and the emotion that you put into that second half and extra time in the turnaround you've got in ahead of the biggest game of the season?
Yeah. Good question, that. And I will rattle through my answers here. Cliches have I got to add?
Chuck out your gut feels.
We take one game at a time. We take 1 week at a time. The next game is the most important game. It'll be a different kettle of fish thrown at us this weekend, and we will have to work out how to slice and dice those fish to serve up for a fish curry. Because if we're technical about it, and the murmurs that come out of the Exeter camp are, yep, they're fabulous. They're really a great attacking team, Harlequins are, but let's see how good they are at attacking when they don't have the ball. Because Exeter are the team that keep hold of the ball the most out of anyone in the Prem. So it's going to be a completely different matchup. Their back, the Bristol backs were their go-to, their attack, all through their superstars in the backs. It wasn't really a forward and forward grunt in your face that Exeter will probably provide this week with, you know, your Sam Simmons coming around the corner in the pods of three, keeping eye of the ball, Dickie getting over the gain line, that sort of attitude. It'll be more, oh God, boys, we're going to have to step up as a forward pack here rather than just run the ball around. So there'll probably be different questions. Have we got the answers to those questions, Alex? You'll have to tune in on Saturday because I have no idea yet. I have no crystal ball. I'd like to think that we can give it a good crack and see where we end up.
Good luck at the weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I want to ask you a couple of bits on England, first of all. Where are you at with England and Eddie? When did you last speak? Do you want to go again? Are you retired?
Right. Have I retired? I haven't retired again, no. That doesn't mean...
Has he said...
That doesn't mean I am retired. I mean, right. Sorry. That doesn't mean I'm not retired. It's just, you know...
Are you available for selection for when he calls?
Not for this summer, no.
For the autumn?
The autumn is a long way away, Alex. Right. Where's my...
If the world becomes a normal place again and there's a bit more flexibility
It's not, but it is the closest thing I've got to a bat. So you go with a question.
Flat bat.
Is it flat? Yeah, that's yep. Flat. You've been fucking flat.
Would you like to play for England again?
Okay, where's that book of cliches? Would I like to play for England again? I would love the opportunity to play for England again. Playing for England is one of my funnest things to do. But I realise where I am in the pecking order. I realise my days are somewhat numbered. And I also realise that if you want to play for England, especially this day and age, you have to be able to commit wholeheartedly to it. And... right now, I can't. But, you know, who's to say that in the autumn, once the baby's a bit, you know, I'll be available for selection. But fucking hell, mate, look at how many good players out there. You've got Genji, for Christ's sake. He's a freak. He knocks people over like a bowling ball in a china shop, you know?
That's a mixture of clichés.
Then you've got Benno Abano. Jesus Christ. The legs on him, man. And the hits he puts in, he carries, he's getting better and better and better. Then you've got Mako. Well, what can't he do apart from have normal earlobes? Because he hasn't. They're the saggiest earlobes in world rugby. And I don't know how he hasn't...
And he can't stay awake for longer than 3 hours.
Yeah, that is also true. I don't know how he hasn't tripped up on his earlobes more often.
I feel sorry for him. Him comes seven, when he gets to hits 50 or something, he'll be like Dumbo trying to fly.
That is true. I would probably argue that he has already hit 50. You know, the classic cliche of, you know, let's have a look at his passport and all that. Then who else you've got? You've got Bevan Rodd.
He would have grown into his face.
What?
I was going to say that actually when he's 50, he'll look about his age. Do you know what I mean? He would have grown into his face. He came out looking like a 50-year-old. But when he hits 50, people go, oh, how old are you? He goes, 50. They go, oh, you're right, that's perfectly normal. That's perfect. Nobody's going to comment. Everyone go, oh, yeah, that's what happens when you get to 50.
I love that comparison picture of him and Alexis Sanchez. That's always one of my favourite go-tos. And then you've got this young lad, Bevan Rodd, who's been going really well. Do you know what I mean? So they've got a plethora. And I can't do what they can do. And I've said to them, look, you know what I can do and you know what I can't do. So if you're ever in an injury crisis, give us a shout. I'll check with the missus if I'm free and try and get out somehow. That'll be it. Is that batted away easy enough? Is that? Like...
No, I think that's a very interesting answer.
Well, I love playing for England, like, mate, but you know it's not. That's out of my hands. It's always one man's choice.
But I think, and I mean this genuinely. I think inadvertently, you're changing the game, and I think you know. Obviously, it's a lovely statement from Quince to put on a helicopter and fly you in and fly you out. But they have realised what makes you you. They have accommodated that, and you've rewarded them with arguably some of your finest form, full stop. And are you conscious of that? Are you conscious that the days of Ian Botham saying, you know, players should not leave tour to go and be with their wives when they give birth, which is 70s and 80s and, you know, a different lifetime ago, that doesn't work in the world that we have now? Are you conscious of...
I don't know if it...
I suppose the flexibility that brings out the best in people and the role that you've got in generating that.
I think it just depends on the environment that you want to create as a team. Like if the person who's running that environment or the culture says, look, this is the way I want it to go, you either want to buy into it or you don't, these are the rules and regs, and then you get a lot of boys, it's about buying into whatever that is. And sometimes that Ian Botham, I don't know that reference, but sometimes that works for them. Those teams go on and be successful being, you know, like that. And sometimes teams go on and be successful by doing what the fuck they want, you know, wearing the wrong kit or turning up when they want and sort of just, do you know what I mean, a little bit more laid back. It's whatever fits that current group at the time that works best. So I'm very grateful to Quins for what they've done for me over a long period of time and where they've stood by me, considering I've acted like such an arsehole for, I'd say 68% of the time at the club I've been a helmet. In fact, it might even creep up to 74%. And, you know, they've stood by me, and I'll always be very, very grateful to them for that. And I just think it depends on the culture and who wants to buy into whatever that is. How do you wrap up that answer of a question that I didn't really want to answer, but I had to come up with something because you always put me on the spot like that because you're a belittling... patronising fuck, and usually because you haven't got an answer to it, you then just come out with an insult, and then that's not fair because you actually really like Alex, and I'm sorry.
I paid you to say that. The reason I ask, because I wanted to get on to your the other bits that you've been doing, and we will plug the Joe Marler Show, which is sensational. But Q Mug,
the what show?
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was let's do that first of all. Are you enjoying creating content and chatting to interesting people and trying something a bit different and getting yourself set for what is going to be a pretty busy media career when you do eventually put your boots away? I mean, are you quite enjoying trying something new? Have you found that fulfilling and interesting?
I've loved doing the show, yeah. I've loved the friendship and the relationship I've built with Tom Fordyce, the co-host, and Steve Jones, the producer. And I didn't think I would, to be honest. I thought, oh, fucking hell, what about, you know, try something different, Joe. You know, better people make better rugby players and that sort of thing. Fuck off. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's try this. Let's go meet some different people. And meeting all these different people whilst doing this podcast has just been... really, it came at a really good time for me personally, where I was at with my mental health and how low I was and stuff like this. So then to then throw myself into meeting all these different people and seeing all their different stories and then giving me even more perspective has been really, really enjoyable. I have had a couple of wobbles, and you know, even a recent one. I turned around to Tom and said, "Fuck this, mate." He went, "What do you mean?" I said, "Look, it's all right for you. You know, you quit the BBC and you set up your own production company, and this is, you know, so it could fit around your family and all that. Like, I've still got a bloody trundle around a rugby pitch, and I've been given a schedule. And then we've got to record this, got to record that. And then you get people like, you know, you lot thinking it's all right to call me up on a Monday night and say, yeah, ignore your newborn kid and your wife and your other three and come and sit in your caravan and chat Winnets with the boys And then your wife texts you saying, how the fuck? What? I need to know. Yep, excellent. Just got the text. How long will you be? Clearly, it's fucking going off in there. I can't hear it because it's noise cancelling, but it's going off in there. A tangent again. It's been really enjoyable, and I've really enjoyed doing other bits, but I still don't see it as any more than just a bit of fun whilst I'm playing rugby. Once the rugby's done, and fucking try and pay off my mortgage. James, no, don't go. I didn't realise caravans have got a mortgage. Enough.
Well, I've got a spare twenty pound note if it'll cover your caravan mortgage. But
excellent. Right. So again, what's this? This again? This is that
the record.
Yeah, and we're chucking that one away.
Mate, he's a DJ. He only notices how to spin five tracks.
And then I will hopefully just trudge off into the night and be happy. Just chilling out and maybe looking after some chickens. That's kind of what I want to do.
Oh, man. Last one, because you have got to go. Obviously, the Joe Marler show is brilliant.
Yeah.
But the Big Boys Don't Cry doc that you did with Sky,
yeah,
was sort of another level. There was a hell of a story within that. And why? How satisfying? How all-consuming to tell that story?
Why? I guess it's not a short answer, but it's not a long answer. I'll try and, like, tidy it as well. I had retired the second time, and I'd been talking to a mate of mine called Gray, who was a sports photographer, and then he became a director, producer for RSA, this film production company. And we'd been chatting, he lived locally, and we'd kind of been going through similar things. And he came up with an idea. He was like, oh, mate, let's film something. Let's go to Japan and you go and try all this crazy Japanese stuff and we'll film it. And I went, why? And he said, well, mainly because I just want to go to Japan to watch the Rugby World Cup and have an excuse as of work to do it. Kind of like what you guys did. I was like, okay, well, let's see where that goes. And then the more we spoke, the more it became clear that I wasn't really up for doing that. And then we kind of touched on some of the mental health stuff that we'd been going through. And then I had flip-reversed it and said, look, mate, I can't do any filming anymore or do any bits and bobs. And he's like, why is that? I said, because I've unretired and I'm going to go give it another crack. And a lot of that, to be fair, was he played a big part in that in terms of the chats that we had. And he said, that's amazing, mate, go enjoy yourself, cheers. And then I got back from that and then we sat down and had a chat and he said, do you fancy making something where we go and meet loads of different people that do loads of different things for their own mental well-being and their own mental health, as a bit of a road trip? Again, it seemed a little bit like he was just looking for an excuse to travel away somewhere and using work for that reason, but it wasn't. And we ended up meeting some incredible people doing some incredible things. And a lot of it, even though we were filming through it all, the actual activities and the people I met along the way were inspiring to me and just amazing experiences. One of my favourites was meeting a lot of the guys and girls out of the Big House Theatre Company, which is in Tottenham. And they help guys and girls that come out of the care system at 19 with acting skills, but in the hope that it transfers to their real life, the social skills, and also helps them get jobs and acting gigs and go on to be involved in adulthood. There was loads in there. Top Boy, they've been in, and they're always putting on shows at their Big House Theatre, and their stories just were unbelievable. Some of the rough rides that they'd had, and to see the way they'd coped and the way they'd come through it, and also the way that they still going through it, was really, really powerful to me. And I just loved meeting every one of them, and it was thoroughly enjoyable.
You got to go.
Yeah, I've got a Joe. How long will you be dot dot now? That right. means capitals. You know, pull the trigger.
I think that's cue for you to go and say goodnight.
Lads, thank you. Thank you for having me. I do really, really appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully.
We love having you on, genuinely. I've not laughed like that, well, since last week, but it's still very nice to have you on. And I, what I,
wanker.
What I love wanker. Is that your story just, I mean, you know, it keeps writing amazing chapters from choppers to Prem semi-finals to incredible performances to your fantastic Joe Marler show, plug, plug, to Big Boys Don't Cry documentaries. I mean, you will always throw it away and you'll never acknowledge it, but genuinely, the way you do what you do, I think you really are changing the dial and the game and the parameters, which is quite an extraordinary thing to say given how much abuse you hand out as you go. But we love you. Good luck this weekend.
So when I said I've got to go and it was really quick, you then decided to be really complimentary but go on for a fucking age.
Yeah, well, you know.
He'd written that monologue for ages, mate. He had to get it out. He's a disguise presenter.
Alex,
at the end of the day, he can't let anything go.
You can all fuck off and see yourselves,
Alex.
Out.
Yes, there's the real Alex. I love him.
So
that is the Alex
I
love, and I want to see him more.
Joe, go. Love the baby. Bye, 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 bye. Good luck this weekend.
But cheers, mate.
And there he goes. I don't quite know what metaphor or analogy to use. Unique and really quite remarkable, Hask.
Yeah, it's brilliant. You know, I've got so much time for Joe. I was very lucky to get to interview him one-on-one and actually, you know, not mess around like he talked about. I think he's a really intriguing guy. He's been on one hell of a journey. I think he's playing some brilliant rugby. I didn't give Quinns, you know, not verbally or you know, or in public, I didn't give him a chance. I thought they were playing Bristol. You know, the likes of Piatel, Rodrada, as he said, were next level. But that's what Harlequins do. You know, they're disruptive in their own way, and I'm very excited. I love the fact they arrived in a chopper. And, you know, I just think if it had been Wasp back in the day, they probably would have given me a unicycle and told me to fucking get on with it. So I'm kind of quiet.
You just mean you're jealous. You're jealous.
I am jealous. I think he's a great guy. I love what he does as a show. You know, he's important, characters like that. And I know he lists all what all the other players can do and how they do it. But, you know, a team is there's so much more to putting a team dynamic together. And when you're a great player like he is, a very physical specimen, but also brings that kind of entertainment and binds everyone together. I think he's exciting, brilliant. And hopefully we'll see him play for England more. And hopefully maybe they'll win the Premiership. You never know.
Can lightning strike twice, Tins? Could be a hell of an outside run.
I think they are playing a far more established, you know, finals team. As I said, six finals on the bounce or whatever it is with Exeter, and are so controlling in what they do, yet can't have game breakers. But it's a chip in the chair. There's always a chance. I think it's going to be very tough for them in an environment that they haven't been in for a while, with young people. But with young kids who are going in, they have no fear. You know, the Liners of the world, Marcus Smith. But then with Danny Kerr, he plays on the edge, even though he will have been there and he'll carry something. But he'll hopefully carry that bit of experience that he can share at the right time, at the right place, on that pitch when it's going to mean the most. And you would have counted them out at half time on the weekend and look what they did. So Exeter will definitely have to come and play their best game.
Going to be a ripper. I wanted to, but Joe burst in. Quickly ask about Lions to Japan as well. Lions to open with a win, or Japan to be a really irritating, awkward first-up opponent?
I think they'll be a hard... I think the days of people going, oh, it's Japan, have passed. I hope they have over the last two World Cups that's been given, and the sort of diligent and how they try and approach rugby. I think it's going to bring out the best in all the Lions players. They're going to have to be on their mettle. You know, it's going to be a game that runs with a lot of ball in play, unless the Lions choose to sort of try and get some control and work on some set piece stuff, which is what they're going to meet in South Africa. But otherwise, it will be loose, and there won't be much kicking from Japan. And I think it could be a cracker, and it'll be a great way to open up the lungs for the boys who've perhaps had a few weeks off before they've met up. So I'm looking forward to being there. It's going to be a tough journey to get up there after my golf day on the Friday, and I have to get on the 6:15 15 train from Birmingham to Edinburgh. And then I've got to get back straight after the game because I've got to ride up a virtual Von 2 for the Cure Parkinson's, for Cure Parkinson's on the Sunday at 8 a.m. and lead the riders out on that. So that's about 2.5 hours of cycling at 8 a.m. on the Sunday morning. So if I'm going very slowly, anyone who's joining me on that ride, don't judge me. Don't judge me. Because I probably will be running on liquid alcohol. Oh, well, not even liquid anymore. It'll be somewhere in my bloodstream.
A slice of alcohol. Delicious.
Yeah.
Why don't you just borrow Marla's helicopter? I'm sure he'd be happy to help. Have you spoken to Orion Hask in Lions Camp? You have a little ping and a message. It looks like they're having a very good time. It looks like the bonding has begun well.
Yeah, I mean, I was very jealous at the Joe Marler's helicopter. Very jealous of the Saracens boys arriving in a private jet today. They look like having a brilliant time. I haven't spoken to anyone actually. I've messaged a couple of people, but I've been given the full custard pie. But they seem to be having a great time, and I think so far that the Lions coverage of behind the sort of red curtain, as it were, is been pretty exceptional. They look to be working quite hard, and I think. You know, the game against Japan is so important because it's just another opportunity to get some game time to prove what you can do and show them that kind of magic. I know Gatlin said that, you know, everybody will get a start in the first four games or first three games or whatever, but any opportunity to go, and they've obviously been in camp and they're living and breathing Lions. You know, they're all stashed up to the max at all times. Sun's been shining. I see them swimming in the sea. They've been playing golf. I mean, you know, it looks like an unbelievable holiday camp that I'm very jealous I'm not involved in.
Good on them. Good luck to the Lions this weekend. That is on Channel 4. Good luck to Exeter and Quins. May the best team win in the Prem Final. That's, I think, on BT Sport. And then the Lions Tour obviously begins a week on Saturday in South Africa. And that'll be on Sky. Tuck in. It's only live once. And it hurts when you miss it. Well done, fellas. And thank you so much to Joe, Marla, Good, Bad and Rugby. God, it'd be funny if we could do that. What do you think it would cost?
That'd be so good.
To buy his surname.
What would he sell his soul for? What would he sell his soul for?
Joe and Daisy.
What did Marrow sell 50% of his for?
Do you remember when Epi Tione at one of the Rugby World Cups rebrand as Paddy Power?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they used the money to get him into the tournament, but they wouldn't let him do it, would they? They would. There were commentators and people refused to do it because it was ambush marketing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
isn't that what we call
marketing works in 2021?
Isn't that what we call disruptors nowadays?
Yes.
Yes.
Well done, fellas. Enjoy your weeks. Thank you to Joe. Well done to Daisy and Pixie and all the Marla clan. Enjoy the rugby wherever you're watching this weekend. We'll be back next week with another superstar guest. Until then, bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.